It's been said that there are 365 verses in the Bible where the Lord tells his people not to be afraid. That means that we have one verse for every day of the year telling us not to fear, but to believe. Now, since sin entered the world through Adam and Eve, every human has known what it means to fear. Everyone in this room has experienced fear to one degree or another. For example, we might fear our enemies, those who hate us, want to mistreat us, or who speak evilly of us. We might fear being alone, perhaps through bereavement, or through isolation, lack of family, being in a place on your own. We might fear future uncertainty. Where will our next pay packet come from? What meals will we eat? What job will we do? What happens when we retire? And for all of us, without an exception, I think it is true to say that every person living has some sense of the fear of death. What will happen to us when we die? How will we die? The good news for Christians and the good news of Christmas is that we needn't fear, because Emmanuel has come into the world. And because the name Emmanuel means God with us, we no longer have any reason to be afraid of any of those things or any other things that I have not mentioned. Because after all, he has dealt with our biggest problems in our lives. He has dealt with the problem of sin in his death on the cross. He has dealt with the problem of Satan, our greatest enemy. And in his resurrection, he has dealt with death itself, giving the Christian hope that just as he died and was buried and rose again from the dead, we also will die, be buried, and rise again from the dead at his coming. Well, this afternoon, we're continuing to look at our Christmas series, a rather unusual Christmas series, I admit, looking at the women in Matthew's genealogy of Jesus. And each woman, there are four who are explicitly mentioned, we're noticing how God was with each one of them, how Emmanuel was with each one of them to fulfill his plans of salvation for them and through them. In this message this afternoon, we are going to see how God was with a fearful Canaanite named Rahab. And so there are two things, just as there were two things this morning, there's two things this afternoon that I want you to notice from this chapter. Firstly, let's think about the fear of Rahab. The fear of Rahab. We need to get some context to Joshua chapter 2. This is one of the problems when we're not doing a series systematically through a book of the Bible. We lose our place, we don't know what's gone before, and we may have forgotten what comes after. So let me tell you what has gone before. Many decades before Joshua chapter 2, the Lord had rescued his people out of Egypt, had led them through the wilderness, and as they stood on the edge of Canaan, he promised to give them the land entirely to live in. And Moses, at that time, the leader of Israel, delegated 12 men to go into the land secretly to find out what the land was like, to prepare for them entering into Canaan. And their mission was very successful. None of them were noticed by the inhabitants of Canaan. They had no difficulty, no issue coming in and out of the land. And what they found was incredibly pleasing. After all, they discovered it was a land that produced much fruit and vegetation. They described it as a land flowing with milk and honey, just as God had said it would be. However, when they returned to Moses, 10 of the 12 spies reported that there were, along with all these good things, giants in the land. Giants who could conquer them. Giants who could defeat them in battle. Giants that would make them quake in their boots. And their news made the people so afraid that they did not believe God's promise that he had given the land into their hands, but they refused to enter the land and occupy it as God had commanded them to do. And as a result of their fear, God prohibited them from entering that land for 40 years. And there they were for 40 years being led by God in circles in the wilderness until that whole generation, bar Joshua and Caleb, the two spies who did not report giants, had died. Now come to Joshua chapter 2. And once again, the children of Israel are on the edge of Canaan. Once again, they are preparing, having been told by God, to go into the land and to occupy it. Moses has died, and Joshua is their leader. And this time, Joshua will not send 12 men into the land to spy, but two. And their journey goes slightly differently. So let's see how the story unfolds, noticing three things. Firstly, let's notice the spies in verse 1. And Joshua, the son of Nun, sent two men secretly from Shittim as spies, saying, "Go, view the land, especially Jericho." And they went and came into the house of a prostitute whose name was Rahab and lodged there. So previously 12 spies had gone. Now this time Joshua sends two spies. And unlike the men before them who had successfully been unnoticed by the inhabitants of Canaan, these two spies, well, they're not so careful, it would appear. Because very quickly they're spotted, they're identified. They're found out. These are Israelites. These are coming to take the land. They're spies. And so they do something quite natural when you are under threat of your life. They quickly found a place of refuge. Now, this place of refuge, we're not explicitly told, but it seems to be that it was an inn. And perhaps a public place in the sense of publicly known as a place where you can stop. The problem is it's a place you can publicly stop because of who owns it. Rahab. This morning we were thinking about a woman who was mistaken as a prostitute. This afternoon we're thinking about a woman who was a prostitute. But there's no underhanded thing going on here. They haven't entered the house in the way Judah entered the tent. They have come into that house for refuge, for safety, for hiding. And Rahab, perhaps an unlikely candidate to be a saviour, does act as a rescuer to these people. There are the spies. But then look at notice the soldiers, verses 2 to 7. It was told to the king of Jericho, "Behold, men of Israel have come here tonight to search out the land." Then the king of Jericho sent to Rahab, saying, "Bring out the men who have come to you, who entered your house, for they have come to search out all the land." But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them. And she said, "True, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from. And when the gate was about to be closed at dark, the men went out. I do not know where the men went. Pursue them quickly, for you will overtake them." But she had brought them up to the roof and hid them with the stalks of flax that she had laid in order on the roof. So the men pursued after them on the way to the Jordan as far as the fords, and the gate was shut as soon as the pursuers had gone out. So news reaches the king. This is how quickly things how quickly news has spread that there are spies in the land. The king of Jericho hears this, and at Rahab's door, very quickly there is a knocking. It's soldiers. Soldiers have come to the door. Soldiers of the king. Bring out the spies, they're saying. And Rahab, quick on her feet, says, well, I did meet two men. They did come into my house, which I'm not trying to make light of it. Wouldn't have been unusual for her house. And yet she says to them, I didn't know where they're from, and I don't know where they've gone. If you act quickly, if you move fast, if you leave now, before the gates of the city close, you'll be able to overtake them. You'll capture them. Problem resolved. And so the soldiers, listening to Rahab, run and after these men who are still in her home. And then notice the stories. There are the spies. She wasn't afraid of the spies. There are the soldiers. She doesn't seem afraid of the soldiers. But then there are the stories. The stories. 8 to 14. Before the men lay down, she came up to them on the roof and said to the men, I know that the Lord has given you the land, and that the fear of you has fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you devoted to destruction. And as soon as we heard it, our hearts melted, and there was no spirit left in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in the heavens above and on the earth beneath. Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that as I have dealt kindly with you, you also will deal kindly with my father's house, and give me a sure sign that you will save alive my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, and deliver our lives from death. So soldiers have gone. Where are the men? They're in the roof. And they're making themselves comfortable for the night. But Rahab goes to the roof to explain to them why she has in fact saved them and not handed them over to the soldiers, being loyal to the city she lives in, Jericho. And she says, she recalls to them, she tells them, there are stories that have come to us about you. We have heard that you have a God who is not a local deity, as the many of the pagan people in Canaan would have believed in, a God who is a God of the sky, or a God who is the God of the land. But we have heard that you worship the one true living God, who is indeed the maker of heaven and earth, who is the God of the heavens and who is the God of the earth, wherever you are. And he determines where we live. That's everything she's saying in that one small sentence. And she says that we have heard what he has done for you. You see, I'm not afraid of you. I'm not afraid of your armies, though I've heard they've done great things. I am afraid of the God who has been the one who has actually fought for you. We have heard about how when you were rescued out of Egypt from under the power of Pharaoh, God brought you through the Red Sea. How he parted the waves. How they walked on dry land. You've been paddling lately? And you put your feet at the bottom of the stream, on the riverbed? And what does it do? It immediately squelches and it kicks up the dirt, doesn't it? The mud. You can tell I'm no scientist. And there it is, it's all kicked up because it's not dry. And there is the miracle that as though water had never been on that ground, they are able to walk through the men and the women and the children and their animals and their possessions through the Red Sea. God has done that, says Rahab. We've heard about that. And we've heard how you fought battles with kings and how you laid to ground cities, great cities. And we heard how God did that for you. How the Lord was with you in that. And Rahab says the response to hearing these stories, we have become afraid. Our fighting men are terrified that you're coming. Our hearts are not ready for battle, but we have melted in fear. Not because of you, but because of your God. What was Rahab's fear? It wasn't the fear of man. It was the fear of the Lord. And it was the fear of death. Because she realized to be an enemy of this God had severe consequences. To be against the Lord of heaven and earth, with his armies coming towards you, there is no defense. There is only death. Please, she says, deliver us from death. Deliver me from death. Deliver my father from death. Deliver my brother and my sister from death. Deliver my nephews and nieces from death. Rahab was someone who had come to fear the Lord. And the book of Proverbs says, "The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life, that one may turn away from the snares of death." That's Proverbs 14, verse 27, if you're taking notes. A fountain of life. Rahab feared the Lord and she turned away from the snare of death, remaining an enemy of God, and she fell on his mercy through these two spies. That's why she hid them. That's why she turned the soldiers away. Was she right to lie? Was she right to deceive? I'll leave that for you to decide. But perhaps some books to help you think further about this and about circumstances like this would be the story of the Ten Boom family. But the point here, the point that is being made in Joshua chapter 2, is that Rahab feared God. And she may have done it imperfectly. If you believe what she did was deceitful and wrong to lie, she may have done it imperfectly. But she feared God in such a way that she would turn from her own people to seek deliverance from death. I wonder this afternoon, have you experienced the fear of God so that you've turned from your old life to seek his mercy, throwing yourself simply upon his grace? In fact, the word here in the Hebrew for kindness and kindly that Rahab uses is the word that is often translated steadfast love. It's that of covenant love that God has displayed to his people. It's the word hesed. And that is what Rahab throws herself upon. It's what the New Testament translates as grace. As I've dealt graciously with you, deal graciously with me. The fear of Rahab. But secondly, let's consider the faith of Rahab. Now, when Rahab is later mentioned in the New Testament, there are three references to Rahab. There is the reference in Matthew 1 in the genealogy of Jesus Christ. There is a mention of her in the letter to the Hebrews, and there is mention of her in the letter of James. Her fear, when she is referenced in all three of those places, is not the primary focus of attention. In fact, it is her faith that is the primary primary focus of attention in particularly Hebrews, and I would argue, James. In the letter to the Hebrews, the writer credits Rahab as being a woman of faith. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 31, we read, "By faith, Rahab the prostitute did not perish with those who were disobedient, because she had given a friendly welcome to the spies." It is not because she gave a friendly welcome to the spies. It was because she gave a friendly welcome to the spies by faith. Faith in God. Faith in the Lord. And we see that here that Rahab's fear of the Lord did not remain as fear, but it produced faith in the Lord. And this is made clear in both her obedience and her deliverance. In her obedience, look at there, verses 15 to 24, we get the rest of the story. In fact, from verse 14, the men said to her, "Our life for yours, even to death. If you do not tell this business of ours, then when the Lord gives us the land, we will deal kindly and faithfully with you." Then she let them down by a rope through the window, for her house was built into the city wall, so that she lived in the wall. And she said to them, "Go into the hills, or the pursuers will encounter you, and hide there 3 days until the pursuers have returned. Then afterwards you may go your way." The men said to her, "We will be guiltless with respect to this oath of yours that you have made us swear. Behold, when we come into the land, you shall tie this scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down, and you shall gather into your house your father and mother, your brothers, and all your father's household. Then if anyone goes out of the doors of your house into the street, his blood shall be on his own head, and we shall be guiltless. But if a hand is laid on anyone who is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head. But if you tell this business of ours, then we shall be guiltless with respect to your oath that you have made us swear." As she said, "According to your word, so be it." Then she sent them away, and they departed, and she tied the scarlet cord in the window. They departed and went into the hills and remained there 3 days until the pursuers returned, and the pursuers searched all along the way and found nothing. Then the two men returned. They came down from the hills and passed over and came to Joshua the son of Nun, and they told him all that had happened to them. And they said to Joshua, "Truly the Lord has given all the land into our hands, and also all the inhabitants of the land melt away because of us." Her obedience. Do you see it there in those verses? Martin Luther famously said, "We are saved by faith alone, but faith that saves is never alone." What did he mean? He meant that true saving faith always produces works. It produces obedience. If we say we believe in God, we will seek to please God. Not because we believe works saves us in any way. It's faith that saves us. But you go to the letter of James, and James is making this point when he mentions Rahab. He says she was justified in her works when she hid the spies. He is saying because it was not her works alone, but it was that faith that produces works. And James's emphasis is, you cannot say you are a Christian and really be saved and not have a change of life. Faith always works. And so how do we see her obedience in these verses? Well, the spies agree to her deal. They say, "Yeah, if you, as you have hidden us, We will and as we leave this city, here is a scarlet cord. Tie this in the window you let us down from. And when we come back as an army to take this city, if you and your family, your father, your brothers, your sisters, and their families are in your home, and you haven't spread word that the spies are coming, that the Israelites are coming, and broken your oath, then you will be saved. But if you don't do those things, then your blood is on your own head. It's demonstrating she hasn't really believed. It's demonstrating that she isn't really with God. And so as they leave, as soon as they leave, we read that Rahab ties that scarlet cord in her window. She gathers her family into that room. She does exactly as she promised to do. She does exactly as the spies tell her to do. Saving faith is always demonstrated in obedience. Rahab's faith was demonstrated in her obedience. But saving faith was also demonstrated in her deliverance. Ultimately, we're going to have to go somewhere we haven't read yet, and that's to Joshua chapter 6. Because here in Joshua chapter 6, the armies of Israel come to Jericho, and for a week they circle the city at God's instruction. And every day they circle the city. And on the seventh day, on their final march around the city, seven times, the priests blow the trumpets, and they will shout to the Lord who has given them the city, and the walls of the city will fall down completely. And they will then be required to pursue everyone within that city. Except there's one part of that wall that remains standing. The house of Rahab. We perhaps forget to tell our Sunday school children that, don't we? But that's what happened. Because, what do we read in verse 22? The two men who had spied out the land, Joshua said, go into the prostitute's house and bring out from there the woman and all who belong to her as you swore to her. So the young men who had been spies went in and brought out Rahab and her father and mother and brothers and all who belonged to her. And they brought all her relatives and put them outside the camp of Israel, and they burned the city with fire and everything in it. Only the silver and gold and the vessels of bronze and of iron they put into the treasury of the house of the Lord. But Rahab the prostitute and her father's household and all who belonged to her, Joshua saved alive, and she has lived in Israel. Notice this. She has lived in Israel to this day because she hid the messengers whom Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. The person writing the book of Joshua in the Old Testament at that time knew who Rahab was. He knew where she lived. He says, if you want to know about God's deliverance, then come with me and I will take you to that Canaanite who hid the spies in her home and was delivered by Joshua and the army before they went in and seized that city, because she is an Israelite with us today. That was a proof that she had been true to her word, that she had truly believed in God. And you see, the truth is, if we have truly believed in the Lord, we believe in the perseverance of the saints, don't we? If we have faith in God and true saving faith, then when on that day, when the greater Joshua comes, and he comes to throw out this old world and bring in his own kingdom, it's then when we have stayed, when we have persevered in the faith, and we are with him on that day, then our faith will truly be shown to be genuine, to be true. And that was the case for Rahab. Her deliverance demonstrated she had had genuine faith in the Lord. See, God was with Rahab by revealing his power to save and turning her fear into a living faith. Are you someone who is filled with fear this Christmas? The good news for everyone who is filled with fear, whether it's the fear of death or the fear of God, is that in Emmanuel, we see God's power. Where do we see God's power most of all? Do we see God's power most clearly as the Israelites cross over the Red Sea? Or do we see God's power in Emmanuel, in the boat with his disciples as he calms the storm? Do we see God's power as he provides for the people of Israel in the wilderness? Of course we do. But we also see Emmanuel's power, God's power in Emmanuel, feeding the 5,000, healing the sick and diseased. But where do we most of all see God's power? We most of all see God's power as Emmanuel goes to the cross to save us, his people, from sin and from death. Again, let me borrow from the writer to the Hebrews, who in chapter 2 says this about Jesus' incarnation and death and the reason for Jesus' incarnation and death. He writes, "Since therefore the children share in flesh and blood, he himself, Jesus himself, likewise partook of the same things. He partook of flesh and blood, that through death he might destroy the one who has the power of death, that is the devil, and deliver all those who through the fear of death were subject to lifelong slavery. Oh, don't be afraid, but believe on Jesus, who has power to save from death, destruction, and despair." So as we draw to a close, let me ask the same question I asked this morning of Tamar. Why is the prostitute Rahab mentioned in the family tree of Jesus in Matthew's gospel? Four women, I'm going to repeat this, four women are the only women of the entire Old Testament who are mentioned in Matthew's genealogy. There must be significance in that. It's as though Matthew is getting a marker pen and he's highlighting something for our attention to link to the birth narrative of the Lord Jesus, or to link to the ministry of Jesus. So what is it that he wants us to think about as we think about Rahab, the prostitute, hiding the spies? Is it she's an unlikely candidate to be included in that genealogy? Well, I think it's this. And there's a few things. Firstly, here is a woman who understands the power of God and the need for salvation. And she asks God to give a sign. But she asks the spies to give a sign. And what is that sign? It is a scarlet cord. Now, my emphasis here, just for those keen listeners, My emphasis here is not going to go the way you think it is. I'm not going to make a connection with the colour of the cord and Jesus' blood. I'm not going to, in fact, I'm going a different way altogether. There is a sign she asks for. A sign that she will be truly saved. Come with me to Isaiah. In Isaiah, we read about God, about a people who are in need of salvation. This time, it is not the foreign nation of Canaan. It's not the city of Canaan, but instead, it is the people of Israel themselves who have come under the judgment of God, and are going to exile. And God says in Isaiah chapter 7, therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel. And what is the verse that Matthew quotes in chapter 1 of his birth narrative concerning Jesus, in the same chapter where he mentions Rahab in the family tree of Jesus? Isaiah chapter 7, verse 14. Here is a woman who desperately wants a sign from God that salvation from death is guaranteed. Well, here is the sign that God gives to Mary and to the entirety of Israel, and not only to Israel, but to you and to me in 2023. This is a sign I shall give you. A virgin shall conceive and give birth to a son, and he shall be called Emmanuel, which means God with us. God who has come to save us from our greatest fear, the fear of death, who has come to rescue us from judgment. Oh, Emmanuel, what a good and precious name for the believer. And what a wonderful thing he gave in telling us the story of Rahab.